Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Like, oh, it's a bit of a monkey, it's a bit of a fridge, there's a bit of a sort of fire in a car. It does sound like some fucking crazy fever dream.
So I'd probably listen to an animal's opinion on crystals before I would a human's.
Typical Taurus.
Not into space, into the space between spaces.
Welcome to Weird Tales and the Unexplainable. My name is Rick Dove, and today I will be your host. But of course, I will be joined by none other than Mr. Bob Shoy. Say hello, Bob.
Hello, Bob.
And Mr. Beef himself. Say hello, Beef.
Hello, Beef himself.
And the fine Mr. Adam Tissington. Say hello, Tiss.
Hello, Tiss.
How are we doing, boys?
We're good.
I'm good.
Yeah, good.
Excellent.
Rick, you nailed it first time with the intro.
Oh, thanks.
Smashed it, mate.
That's the best one any of us have ever done, ever.
Yeah, normally we take about three or four goes. So.
It's easily the most professional intro we've ever had, ever.
Well, I'll watch this back and I'll end up cringing because I hate the sound of my own voice.
So. Same.
You get used to it.
But as always, thank you. Thank you for having me on. Really appreciate you guys inviting me on, especially to host. Like, this is a real privilege.
Well, were you thinking thank you when you were watching Kingdom of the Crystal Skull in preparation for this?
Well, initially when we first talked about it, I was super hyped. And when you told me you were doing the Indiana Jones series, it just took a moment for me to process that there were four movies and I was the fool guy. But I know that you've also been through the same pain, Bob, and you've watched it recently as well. So I'll let you off.
I watched it last night.
Yeah. So something that really surprised me about this film, actually, on the rewatch, like, because I hated it the first time. I hate it the second time, too, but...
You loved it now.
Taking it in again was the scattergun approach they've taken to the sheer number of topics that they address. There is a hell of a lot. I mean, Beef, Tiss, have you guys watched this?
I've not watched this.
You lucky bastard.
I don't think I've even got a grasp of what it's about, apart from Crystal Skulls. Is it based in Mexico?
I don't think Lucas and Spielberg had a grasp of what it was about, to be honest.
Oh God, Lucas was involved.
Of course he was. It's his baby. Lucas and Spielberg have to be involved in all of them.
Yeah, but like the old ones, fair enough. But then, you know, when he's a known quantity, and to get him to re-sign him to the films, that's just asking for trouble.
This is after the prequels, yeah.
This is after, yeah.
The thing is, though, like, you guys are going to have to come back and do one more because they've got the next Indiana Jones coming out where he's undoubtedly going to die.
I hope so.
Yeah, it even says, like, I looked on it today. I looked on, like, IMDb and it says the fifth and final installment in the Indiana Jones saga.
There you go.
And that's all it says about plot. Because I was like, I wonder who's in it. I wonder what it's about. That's all it says. He's dying.
There's one thing we can be thankful for. Spoiler alert to the audience. But at the very end of Crystal Skull, we see a part where Shia LaBeouf reaches down and picks up Indy's hat and goes to put it on. And even on the rewatch, I was like, no. And then thankfully, Indy snatches it out of his hand. So it was teased that he was going to be the next in line.
I mean, even at the time, it was like, the audience don't want this.
No.
Wait, is Shia LaBeouf his son?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. Unfortunately.
Henry Jones III.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mert. Matt Williams.
It's awful. It's so awful. And when he first rolls in, he looks like a prototype of one of the village people.
He doesn't look intimidating. He doesn't look. No. He doesn't suit the character he's playing at all.
Like, he's supposed to be like a full-on greaser. Like, he carries a blade and all this, and he's got that attitude. Well, he's supposed to have that attitude, but it's Shia LaBeouf.
We've gone off on a tangent. Beef. What do you remember of Crystal Skull? Were you a fan of it when you saw it?
No, I hated it. <What's that? laughs> But like, so I think, but actually, I mean, and we were kind of saying this before, that I remember the old ones through tinted glasses, I think, especially, mm-hmm. Especially the one that I covered. I seem to remember enjoying them more when I was younger. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And maybe it's that thing of someone telling you, oh, these are a classic. You've got to watch them. And so you're like automatically geared up for the fact that it's going to be great. But absolutely hated it. And hated it the second time when I watched it again.
You did it again as well?
Yeah.
You watched it a second time.
Man. Yeah.
And you hated it the first. What is wrong with you? Is wrong with you?
Because I wanted to give it another go. I thought, well, maybe I was being unfair, or like, maybe, I don't know, sometimes you need to watch it.
And how long is this film?
Too long.
It's 2 hours and 2 minutes.
You gave 2 hours and 2 minutes to something you hated the first time.
It's not that long.
Technically 4 hours and 4 minutes.
Most films now are like at least 2.5 hours.
You're glutton for it, mate.
No. I tell you what it was. I think, same as Rick, I think the first time I didn't realise Shia LaBeouf was in it. Like, I just hadn't really paid attention. I hadn't seen any trailers. And so when he popped up, I was like, oh, really? You know? Mm-hmm. And then when you work out he's Indy's son, I was like, no. So
His reputation then, though. Shia didn't have the reputation he has now then.
This was 2008, no. Wasn't it? So this was like peak Shia LaBeouf, just no one really liking him.
I think I only really knew him as... No, peak Shia LaBeouf, no one really likes him, is now.
Well...
After all the allegations have come out about his, you know, abusing and stuff.
Okay, so maybe it's pretty bad now too, but it started then.
It started pretty low and it just went lower.
It was like, in Even Stevens, he was a bit annoying.
Yeah, that was all I really knew him from when I saw
but
this.
He was a kid. But
I saw him in Holes.
Oh, right, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
That was a great book.
And film.
So the other night, it's funny you should say that, Rick. So the other night, Rachel and I watched Rise of Skywalker. So they've been on Channel 4 the last 3 weeks.
Oh,
and we've just been watching them, just, you know, they're on, it's Saturday night, nothing else is on. Bearing in mind, I could just watch them in any time on Disney, but it doesn't matter. And it's the same kind of thing as, you know, you're kind of watching it and you're like, hang on a minute, so we need to get this wayfinder. Hang on, now there's a dagger. Oh, now we need to find the language. It's just like lots of, and it was the same with this. It feels like you just get used to something, you get into a rhythm, and then they change direction. And
interestingly, Beef, when I watched it last night, I said to Becca, this is really similar to Rise of Skywalker. And it had a very similar, like, fans hated it backlash as well. They're very similar in, like, they throw too much at the wall and none of it really sticks and nothing is got enough of a plot to it. It's just scattershot. And there's just too many little bits. Controversially, when I saw Kingdom of the Crystal Skull at the cinema, I liked it. And I didn't understand what all the fuss was about. I was like, that was fun. It was a fun action movie. But I think at the time, I hadn't seen like a fun adventure movie in so long. I was a little bit like along for the ride. And I've watched it lots of times because, like I said last time, we had it on Blu-ray in our house. And my brothers used to watch it all the time when they were kids. So it's been on the background so many times. And out of curiosity, I've watched it. I've probably watched this film like more than 10 times, crazily. I watched it again last night.
What?
And it's not very good, is it? I still think, though, there is the shell of a good film in amongst it. There are elements to it. Like, Harrison Ford is not the problem with this film. He is playing Indy as well as he's ever played Indy. He is full on Indy. Everything around him is a mess, but he's Indy. And there are certain plot points in this film I think are actually good. I know people hate the alien stuff, but I'm like, no, they're doing 1950s. They're doing, like, Roswell, 50s saucers.
Sorry, aliens...
Oh, yeah, we'll get to it.
Yeah, there are aliens there. So this is why I wanted you to watch it. There are aliens in this Indiana Jones film.
Oh, my God.
We did try and tell you.
My problem with it is that it's just too many big set pieces. Too I know many Indiana set Jones pieces. Is known for its set pieces, but it's like big set piece, tiny exposition, big set
yes,
piece,
there's
tiny
too
exposition
much.
The whole way. Mm. And then there's one part where it's like, I swear, like half an hour or 45 minutes where they're just scrambling to get to a temple.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Just like a pure action scene, and there's a bit with ants
the
like
stuff
overrunning
that,
them.
Yeah, yeah, the stuff that isn't set piece is good, though. Like, I love the investigation stuff in this one. When he's doing all his, like, linguistics and, like, working out the what this means in this language and all that stuff and digging through his books.
Yeah,
some of the best investigator indie stuff.
Yeah.
And when they're going through the tomb in Peru, I think that's all right. That little tomb set piece is pretty fun.
Yeah, that felt very indie, yeah.
Yes, yeah. They're the
but
two
too much
bits.
Of it's like fighty and, you know, like
so
blowing up Russians.
So those two bits feel like indies, basically.
Right.
So, yeah, that's my controversial take anyway. I don't think it's as bad as people say. It's a fucking... It's definitely the worst one.
Mm,
but I
yeah.
don't... I think there's seeds of a good idea in there.
Yeah. I suppose to keep... To get Tiss up to date, I think what we'll do is I've got like a whole list of stuff, and I kind of did it as I was watching the film. So it kind of steps us through sort of piece by piece the kind of weird and paranormal things that they cover.
Mm-hmm.
So the one that I'm opening with is Area 51.
Yes.
Because that's where it begins. That it turns out that is the massive stash house we see where they place the Ark of the Covenant, which
yes.
also makes a little cameo appearance in there.
Another little comment I would have about that is actually there's a little bit... I like the indie films for being standalone adventures.
Mm.
And there's a little bit too much like winky nostalgia in this one. Like, oh, we're going back to the warehouse. Oh, Marion's back. Oh, there's... And it's like, no. Everyone should stand alone. You shouldn't reference a previous film ever. And if you do, mm-hmm. it's got to be very subtle. Like when he sees... Mm. In Last Crusade, he sees a picture of the Ark of the Covenant. He's like, oh, sort of rolls his eyes.
Mm.
That's I don't want anything more than that. When they're going back to like the warehouse, I'm like, come on.
I did like the way they introduced it as Area 51 there, because it's like the Russians dressed as American soldiers pull up to this guardhouse. They mow down all the other guards and they start driving through. And then the camera pans up and you see that classic Area 51 sign that says use of deadly force is authorized.
I actually like the idea that the place where the Ark went, where you see that warehouse, was revealed to be Area 51. I'm like, that's not bad. That's all right.
And interestingly, it fits the timeline as well, because Area 51 actually opened in 1942 and the film is set in 1957.
Oh, yeah.
And the Groom Lake Test Facility had already been operating for 2 years under Project Aquatone, which was the Lockheed U-2 spy plane development program.
Oh.
So realistically, the facilities were there, but they would be a lot more developed than what we see in the film.
And that first film where the Ark goes into it is 42, that is set, right?
Yes, yeah.
So it lines up perfectly, yeah.
Interesting.
Although, one thing that really did bug me is they have the silly bit with magnets, the magnetic body. They throw dust,
doesn't make sense,
gunpowder into the air, which gets attracted to the alien body that's in there, which is recovered from war as well. Like it gets convoluted very quickly.
Not quite as silly as the fridge.
No,
but you know what bothered me this time about that? I don't want to bang on about what bothered me about the film. Normally, this is the first time I've thought, okay, they throw, what they do is, Tiss, the case they're looking for in this endless warehouse full of cases is magnetic. So he empties, like, he gets some gunpowder, chucks it in the air, and follows where the gunpowder flies to. And I'm like, if it was that magnetic, wouldn't it be like pulling...
Wait, gunpowder's magnetic? What's it made from?
I feel very British right now. I don't know what's in gunpowder.
I don't know. I mean, I'm talking from an absolute novice point of view. I have no idea. But that surprises me.
Okay.
Here we go.
I'm going to be on a watch list. I've just typed gunpowder ingredients, but it's potassium nitrate, sulfur, and carbon.
I've got a little story about gunpowder, just a little tangent.
Go on.
When I was younger, my cousin Lucy used to always have sweets in her room, always. And there was these like gobstopper-looking things. So I started like eating one, and it was gunpowder. It was one of those balls that you clack together. So I was sucking on a gunpowder ball.
Oh, shit.
When you said I thought you meant there were sweets called gunpowder. I thought you were talking about them.
No.
They were like little sour, crunchy things called gunpowder.
I actually sucked on a ball of gunpowder.
Well, there you go. Explains a lot.
Wow.
Yeah, it does.
So anyway, the gunpowder's flying off. And I'm just thinking, if this thing's magnetic enough to pull all this gunpowder through the air, wouldn't it be pulling at like the keys on their belts? Mm-hmm. And wouldn't they
feel
it?
Which
it
does later. Yeah,
later. Yeah. I don't know, it just feels
a
bit
like really close. No, it but is a bit silly.
It is a film about aliens, so we can't really complain too much about the stretch of reality.
Also, the other issue with this film is way too much CG. It was like Lucas got hold of Spielberg and was like, no, you can do anything with CG now. And they went way overboard. Because when I think of indie, I think of practical sets, really cool practical effects.
Mm.
And this is just like a cartoon. But anyway,
one thing that really bothered me about the alien is that they mentioned the reason that they'd kidnapped Indiana Jones to go and find where this alien body was is because they called him in to examine it. Why would they call in an archaeologist to examine a top secret alien corpse?
He says about it, it's all a bit messy. They never explain much in this film very well. He was at Roswell, but he never saw the alien, is what he says later on in the film.
Oh, okay. I missed that. I thought he was brought in to examine it.
I don't remember that.
I think he said it was just a lot of wreckage and...
I remember that, yeah.
He says, it's just a lot of wreckage and something covered in a sheet or something. Hmm. I got the impression that he never actually saw the alien at Roswell. He didn't really know what was in the box. And he was on site looking at some of the wreckage and stuff, the bits of craft or whatever. But like I say, it's not clear with its plot lines sometimes, this film.
Yeah, no, that's a problem I had, especially with Kate Blanchett's character, which I'll come to in a bit. But apparently the book actually covers a lot more of it and goes a lot more in depth on characters' histories and a lot of the sort of backstory in it.
Did you read it for the pod?
Hell no, nor will I ever. That is one book I condone burning.
I really want to know if any of our listeners have read the novelization of King of the Crystal Skull. And I would like a review, please.
I mean, is the CG stuff, is that because Harrison Ford was like 60 when they made, and he's probably not so...
I'm talking about like the actual alien and stuff.
Yeah, that was a bit stupid.
the CG alien has nothing to do with Harrison Ford. It's just like a lot. There's just a lot of stuff going on. Like when they're going through the jungle. I mean, there's a bit in this where Shia LaBeouf swings like Tarzan, and I always forget it's in this film. And I'm like, the fridge bit's out the way. That's the worst bit. And then when he starts swinging with the monkeys, I'm like, oh yeah, this is even worse. Yeah, Tiss, there's a bit where Shia LaBeouf friends some monkeys and swings through the trees on vines with them. So.
Ridiculous.
Also, Tiss, something else you need to understand about this character is not only is he like a greaser bad boy, but his mum tried to put him in the best of schools where he studied fencing, which definitely won't come into it later.
You know what?
What the fuck?
It's the biggest telegraph you've ever seen.
When he gets in that sword fight, standing on the back of the car, this sounds like we're making up. For Tiss, who's never seen it, it sounds like we're making this film up. When he gets in that sword fight on the back of the car, this was the first time I lent to Becca last night. Becca watched it with me. I said, because earlier on he said about how he did fencing. And she was like, yeah. We know. It's like, it's the first time I got that link.
It's painful.
That's fucking painful, mate.
Thing is, though, I always think when you see this kind of thing in movies, I don't know why they think they need to put it. Like, if that had just happened, I wouldn't question, like, hang on a minute, how can he sword fight? Like,
yeah,
it's a film. You just wouldn't question
it. And so it's an Indiana Jones film, so it's just kind of whatever's like fun at the time. You just go with the roll with the punches.
Yeah. So we get introduced to Kate Blanchett's character in the whole scene at Area 51 where they're trying to heist the alien body. Yeah. And she is carrying a sword on her side. And it's literally like a couple of scenes later, he's like, yeah, I studied fencing. It's like, fucking hell, here we go.
And India's made clear to point out, like, yeah, she carries a rapier. Like, it's mentioned a few times. We're like, okay, swords, we get it. Yeah. Kate Blanchett doing a dodgy Russian accent carrying a rapier is the villain of this, by the way.
It is the worst. She says
Kate Blanchett, remind me. Kate Blanchett, can't think of the face.
Very famous Australian actress, not Russian.
Any other film she's been in?
Oh yeah.
so many.
Lord of the Rings.
She's in Lord of the Rings.
She's Galadriel. She's Galadriel.
Yeah.
Yes, there you go.
I'll be honest, that's the only thing I know. I only know her as Galadriel. That's it.
We did an episode of Kate Blanchett for the film pod, so I've seen about 40 films with her in.
Oh, wow.
It's almost like she does acting for a job or something.
Almost.
Her accent is horrific, though. It channels absolutely every Eastern European accent stereotype you can imagine.
And it does just go into English every now and then.
There's even the bit where she's like, how do you say?
And she's otherwise a pretty good actress. Like, I like her in a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
but this
she's
is not her finest, not her finest hour.
Colonel Dr. Irina Spelko. Three times I have received Order of Lenin. Also, medal as hero of socialist labor. And why? Because I know things. I know them before anyone else. And what I do not know, I find out. Now, what I need to know now is in here.
But this is just turning into us, like, reviewing the film.
Well, let's bring it back on track then. So if we're talking about Blanchett, one thing that's kind of hinted about her character is that she has psychic powers.
Yeah, I find that odd. I forget that's a facet of the film. Like,
it's not expressly stated anywhere, but it says like she's on this quest for knowledge, which is why she's trying to find this. And the reason that they're looking for the alien is it said that this other alien being visited Earth to search for 13 missing other beings that are like its descendant, like that it's descended of, and somehow that ties into this alien body.
I get confused of where they're going with it. So that is like the alien council we see at the end, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
We do see it. We see like basically the Jedi Council chambers, Tis, but full of aliens at the end.
Yeah, they say that there's a couple of other beings they know that have visited this Earth, and there's one that crashed in Roswell, and the other one was supposed to be the Tunguska meteor explosion, you know, that leveled all the trees back in the 1908, I think it was.
Hmm. Because when they opened the one from Area 51, she says, oh, a cousin, perhaps.
Yeah.
A distant cousin, perhaps. Just something like that.
That's it, yeah. It's very, very tenuous. Because that body is never seen again.
Again, I see where they're going with this film, because when you've got, in the 40s, you've got Nazis looking for religious artifacts, which is true.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you fast forward to the 50s, because they filmed it 20 years later, and it's like, okay, what was going on in the 50s? The space race, Russians, and like Area 51 and Roswell and aliens. They're trying to do like, okay, some wacko Russians are looking for the hot shit of this era, and they're surrounding it in the tropes of the 50s. And it, on paper, you could make a good film out of this concept. I stand by it. It's like not a bad idea.
Yeah,
definitely. Apparently, once again, the book expands more upon Blanchett's character's psychic powers. But
Rick's trying to sell the book.
No, I'm really not. Really, really not. If you have a look on the fandom page online, actually, there's a lot on there. So don't buy the book. Go to the fandom site instead and have a little read. But it says apparently that it was one of Lenin's passion projects, according to the book, the exploration of psychic abilities. But I was having a little read up on that, and the timeline doesn't fit, because apparently the Russians did do experiments into ESP in the 1980s. And that was after the Americans had done their Stargate project, which was a similar thing about remote viewing and psychics or that kind of thing, which was in 1978.
Yeah, this is 57, this film.
Yeah, there's just a lot of Kate Blanchett giving eyes at Indiana Jones, and there's a point where she goes, "You're a hard man to read, Mr. Jones," and that's all that is hinted about her psychic powers. And that's
she stares at him for a bit and then says she can't read him.
Yeah, yeah, that is it.
You're a hard man to read, Dr. Jones.
Ouch.
So, we will do this, what is expression? Old-fashioned way. You will tell us. You will help us find what we seek.
But apparently, according to the fandom page, it says she was born with apparent psychic powers, which led to her being ostracized in early life, and she was consumed with the desire to discover why she was different. So, all things aside, that now brings us to the very famous fridge. Because after they've explored the warehouse and there's been an alien body seen and a nice little chase, Indy gets chased away by the Russians and hides in a lovely little looking village or town. And as he starts ducking around the houses, he sees that it's full of dummies. For some reason, the tellies are on, but the taps don't work. And he's trying to find a
place
to
hide. But the sprinklers are running. It's really odd.
Yeah,
it's
that
so
pissed
inconsistent.
Me off. Yes. Mm. And as most people know, he hears a big alarm sounding. The Russians start fleeing the scene. He figures something terrible is happening. He opens a fridge and it just happens to pan across the little little manufacturer's mark that says lead lined.
Yeah.
As he gets in, closes the door behind him, and one of the atomic tests detonates, absolutely decimating the town and sending Indy flying off in a fridge.
Yeah.
Mm.
So this is ludicrous. And this, I liked it in the cinema. This is the bit in the cinema I was like shaking my head at. I don't know. This whole section feels like they could have just cut it from the film. It feels pointless. They could have just cut from him fleeing Area 51 to him being questioned about what was going on. But you've just got this stupid scene in the middle where he's literally hit by an atomic bomb while he's in a fridge.
Yeah.
Tiss, again, I'm not making this up.
I found a very good video that I will share with you guys, which is a scientist talking about this particular scene. And it's not a case of if he would have died, it's a case of how many times he would have died.
Yeah.
So, oh, wow.
We've got the pressure from the explosion as a first, which would destroy the fridge. It was enough to shred the Jeep that the Russians were driving away in, so a fridge would stand absolutely zero chance.
Yeah.
Another little side note, the fridge itself would never be lead-lined because it would be a terrible insulator for cold. It just wouldn't work. It would be insanely heavy. It'd be very expensive as well, and there were never lead-lined fridges manufactured.
Right.
But we've also got neutron radiation exposure. We've got fallout exposure, multiple impacts as he is slammed into rocks, thrown down a hill and tumbled.
That's the bit that gets me. It's the it's the way it flies through the air and bounces like his head would be mushed.
Yeah. I was watching it and I was going dead. Like it's just so many. You've also got the heat as well and oxygen deprivation because all of the oxygen would just be absorbed by the giant nuclear fireball.
Right.
There is no surviving that. Like I know it's supposed to be like a fun little scene, but it's just ridiculous.
I can take fun, silly scenes in indie films. That is too much.
Yeah.
But I just remember thinking, does it have to be atomic? Like, could it not have been another explosion, which would have been way more believable? Did it have to be so ridiculous?
Mm.
You know what? When you see it fly through the air and the door opens and he rolls out, I was thinking at the time, oh, this is a misdirect. Like, we're thinking, no way, he's not in that fridge, and then it opens and he's not actually in it, and he found an actual more believable way out.
But no.
Mm.
I would have gone with that because it's subverting your expectation, but, like, him actually rolling out of fridge.
And it's also very indie. They do that through all the other films,
I just love where you all draw the line. In amongst all these other ridiculous things, it's like I draw the line at nuclear fridges riding, surfing a fridge away from atomic bombs.
I mean, it became a bit of a expression, didn't it? Like nuking the fridge. It was jumping the shark. Yeah. It was basically the new version of that.
Yeah, I love it. And it also, of course, made an appearance in the game Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah.
If you turn on the little perk, you can get the start, which is a weird wasteland not far outside the main town of Good Springs that you start in. You find a fridge with a man inside there, and he has got Indy's hat right alongside him, which is it's like the fancy gambler's hat, I think it is, if I remember correctly. But it's a beautiful little reference.
Yeah, and if you're playing Fallout New Vegas, you do have to tick Weird Wasteland.
Yes, it's the only way to play. The other thing that surprised me as well is after this scene, because we get a nice little cut after this, is we just see him being scrubbed down by some men with brushes. That is it. That's he's absolutely fine after that. Bubbly brush.
I'm very glad that you checked on the fridge thing, because when we watched it last night, Becca was like, you couldn't survive that, could you? Like, one, I was like, no. I said, but also, I really hope Rick tells me that you can't survive that tomorrow, and I really hope he checked.
I will send you that video to say you can watch it for yourself.
There's
some good stuff in there. Yeah.
Please do. It's like, I remember thinking it at the cinema, and I remember thinking it again when I watched it the second time. Like, it didn't have to be a nuclear bomb. It could have been any other test that they could have done, and I would have gone, yeah, all right, it's indie. You know, you accept the crazy stuff. It's just, I don't know, I feel like it's too... it's almost like we're idiots. Like when they wrote
it's really
that,
on the nose. Yeah,
they were like, have you seen? If you go on YouTube and have a look at nuclear tests and what they do to the environment. Like, they would have been like, any sane person would have gone, nah, they'll never have that. They're not gonna believe that. But they did it anyway.
But the film starts with cartoon gophers.
True.
Like CGI gophers farting around for the camera. So you know it's gonna be sillier from the start. That's what I mean. Like, from the get go, you're like, they got carried away.
Jesus.
Just before it started, I was like, they got carried away. That's how it starts, Tis, by the way, like a gopher poking its head out of the ground, like a little CGI gopher and going, reet, reet, reet.
That is ridiculous. I quickly need to go and do an emergency getting a plug, because my phone battery's dying, and I think it's because it's on a USB charging thing, so I'm going to grab a plug so it's a bit more efficient.
Go.
All right.
I was convinced he was going to say poo.
Yeah, the thing is, it's pretty basic. There's not a lot to go too in-depth on, which is a bit of a shame. There's some of the topics, though, like, as we'll get into in a bit, like the Crystal Skulls have got some areas of interest.
I know nothing about them, so I'll be interested to see what you've got about it.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, I'll try and keep my inner skeptic silent until we've actually addressed it, talked about it a little bit, and then we can just tear it to shreds.
Okay.
That's what Bob usually does.
I try not to. I try so hard. I've got some questions for Tis around that as well, actually, because I was listening to episode 105 where he talks about crystals.
Well, he's having a change of heart about stuff, because we talked about energy last time and he was some of his thoughts were different to previous episodes where we talked about positive, negative energy.
As a listener, I've noticed him getting more sceptical. Over the years, I've seen him slowly start to back off from some of the things he's talked about before.
Yeah, but yeah, I think so.
We'll see. It'll be interesting to see what his thoughts are.
Yeah, but I suppose when we started doing this, we were still in our 20s.
That's true. Yeah.
Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
I was so bright-eyed. I was so bushy-tailed.
There we go.
He's back.
So we talked about him surviving the fridge. He's getting scrubbed down and interrogated. That's where we're up to now.
Yeah. Just before I go on to the next bit, which is probably my highlight of the film, is one thing I've read from the apologists of this film is they say that they think that Indiana Jones might have survived this because either the power of the Ark was still with him, the power of the Grail was still with him, or the fact he drunk the blood of Kali, which makes him superhuman, which is super convenient.
I have heard people say, like, oh, because he drank from the Grail, he is like, that's how he survives all this stuff from now on.
Then it's not supposed to work when you've got over the threshold.
Exactly. That's what we said last time. I think it's people forgetting that point of drinking from the Grail. Like, as soon as you go past the Grail, you're only immortal if you stay on the grounds to protect the cup. As soon as you leave, you lose that power.
Yeah,
I think people forget that detail, because I always forget that detail. I mean, it's only in my head because I watched it so recently.
I know it saves his dad outside there, but I think even that is supposed to be showing the dwindling power of it.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's enough to heal his wound.
And healing a wound is different from making you immortal. Yeah.
Yeah. And let's note that his dad is just dead in this one. Like, there's no fucking about. They just have a scene where, like, dead. No, he's dead. He's a photo on a desk. It's a shame he died. Move on.
Yeah.
So yeah, my absolute highlight of this film came next, which has got nothing to do with anything being weird, but we see the janitor from Scrubs. He appears as an FBI agent, which was fantastic.
You know what? I was watching that and I was like, where do I recognise that guy from? And that you've only just unlocked it for me now, as you say it.
It's beautiful. He's just the janitor, but an FBI agent. It's great.
Yeah. Very odd bit of casting.
The tallish guy.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Okay, right.
There's a bit of a nod
he's
to the whole...
He's got one scene.
You know the whole, the Ark is being watched by top men. Men.
Yeah, there's
a little bit of that, because the janitor turns around to Indy and says, you are now of great interest to the Bureau. Great interest.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice little nod, but it's the only time we see him, and it's the only time the FBI comes into it. But it's sort of hinted that Indy might be like a Soviet spy, because he let them get away...
Yeah, you've got a lot of that, like, Soviet paranoia stuff going on in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the era it's in.
Yeah. And then really, after that, there's a whole lot of bullshittery with introducing Shia LaBeouf and running from
so
here to
there. So much bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of Indiana Jones, I think of Globetrotting Adventures, not riding a motorbike outside his workplace of business.
Exactly.
Like 20 minutes of just farting around outside the university.
And there's that terrible scene where they like power slide through a university library, hitting absolutely nothing. They stop next to a student who's like, "Oh, Dr. Jones, yeah. I've just got a question for you." It's so bad.
Yeah, but the thing is, I still let it slide because Harrison is still doing good indie like closing lines when he's like, you know, if you want to be an archaeologist, you have to get out of the library.
It's true. That's pretty slick. Yeah.
Excuse me, Dr. Jones.
Yes.
I just had a question on Hargrove's normative culture model.
Forget Hargrove. Okay. Read Ver Gordon Child on diffusionism. He spent most of his life in the field.
Want to be a good archaeologist? You gotta get out of the library!
And yeah, after that, I suppose that gets us on to the crux of this topic, which is the crystal skulls themselves.
Yeah, so from the farting around on the bike, I only watched this last night and I'm already getting muddy. They go to Peru.
Yeah.
Next.
Yes, because the skulls are there for some reason.
The conquistadors.
It was Francisco de Orellana. Yeah. Who is apparently on a quest to find the crystal skull.
He was looking for El Dorado.
That's it. Yeah.
And then another plot point they just chuck in here. El Dorado's in play now.
Yeah, which my ad is absolute bullshit. Francisco de Orellana was a real person. He was a conquistador, but he was actually looking for cinnamon due to its high value at the time. He had nothing to do with searching for El Dorado. But,
or was he?
I suppose for any listeners that don't know, El Dorado was the fabled city of gold, where the streets were allegedly paved with gold, or the buildings were made of gold. It's supposed to be like the ultimate place of, I believe it was Aztec or Incan technology.
Yeah.
And
I mean, my knowledge of South American stuff is poor. I loved it as a kid, but I just loved all of it, and I get it all conflated together.
Yeah. Yeah, same, unfortunately. Sorry to any of our South American listeners.
Yeah.
So this actually leads me back to something I was just talking about whilst you were gone, Tis. Because back in April 2018, you hosted an episode on crystals. And you talked briefly about your stones and your furry sack. And one of the things that you said was that quartz is the Mac Daddy of crystals, but we never actually got an explanation on that episode as to why it was the Mac Daddy of crystals. So I've got a question that's kind of twofold for you, which is, do you remember why quartz is considered the Mac Daddy of crystals? And two, what is your opinion on crystals these days?
So quartz is the Mac Daddy of crystals. God. I have not the slightest clue. I think it's because quartz, you can make, like, what am I trying to say? Quartz was used in the manufacturing of, like, a lot of things, like clocks and, like, I don't know, fucking loads of shit. Quartz is, like, everywhere. And I think it's the Mac Daddy because it was the one that is, like, obviously the most useful in like a sort of like material science sort of
way. Every time he says Mac Daddy, it makes me laugh.
I know.
In terms of what I think of crystals now, I mean, yeah, I don't know really. Probably unchanged. How did I feel about them back then? I'm trying to think.
Well, from what I could hear, it sounded like you was quite into it. It sounded like you and the missus were quite into buying crystals, and you was talking about how like when you go into a shop, you shouldn't just go and like pick out a crystal. You should wait and like feel it, and it should guide you towards it. Like,
I think I'm slightly more cynical these days.
Okay.
I'm just cynical in general, though.
I seem to recall, and obviously, Rick, you might be able to correct me because you've listened to it, but I seem to recall making a link to when Harry Potter goes into the wand shop and the wand chooses you, you don't choose the wand. And I remember you saying, like, that you go into a shop, but the crystal chooses you, you don't choose the crystal.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember now.
I remember recording the episode because it's one of the few that we recorded at Becca's parents' house.
At Becca's
I remember
house,
him bringing the crystals
over.
But I remember going to the crystal shop in Leighton Buzzard to try and do a little bit of like, I see if any crystal chooses me. And I've still got those crystals in the car, in the little change thing in the car. I used to always have them in my pocket when I worked at the brewery, and I used to rub them. I don't know if they made a difference. I used to like rubbing them, though.
The crystals, you're saying, yeah?
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought we were talking about something else then.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
There's this really good picture I saw on Reddit a few years back, which was a sort of new agey person who, on their car steering wheel, on where the horn would be, they'd glued a bunch of crystals into the shape of like an ankh. And they were like, oh, this is fantastic. This is really good. This can keep me safe when I'm driving. And someone was like, no, you've just turned your airbag into a claymore mine. So you'd say you're a bit more sceptical these days then, Tis. Is there any particular reason or...?
Because the world's a bit fucked, and I think everything's a bit more sort of depressing these days, and I don't really give a shit, I suppose, is the most depressing sort of answer to that question.
I was going to say, dude.
I feel like you've become generally more sceptical, not just on crystals, but on a few things. You seem more sceptical these days.
Yeah, I just don't think...
I think listeners have noticed that as well. I think someone said something like that recently in an email. You seem more sceptical these days.
Yeah, I think, God, who knows, without getting it too dour, I don't know, I think I had a sort of, like, whimsical devil's advocate type view back then, and now I'm a tired person.
Would you say you still carry any spiritual beliefs, or did you find that sort of fading out as you get older and a bit more jaded?
Oh, no, I do have spiritual beliefs. Hmm. It depends what we mean by spiritual. I guess I still have my faith in what I believe is going on in terms of reality.
Yeah.
In terms of crystals and zodiacs and stuff like that, I don't know if they're just human constructs that we've sort of... They're just very, like, human-made, you know? And I just don't believe that humans know what's going on. That's yeah. my belief. Anything that's human... sort of like knowledge I kind of discount, because I think we're fucking stupid and we don't know anything. I mean, the way the world's going at the minute just gives me that faith that we really are fucking stupid. So I'd probably listen to an animal's opinion on crystals before I would a human's. And I don't know if they collect crystals, probably not.
I never know what he's going to come up with next. What I would say is, some of these things, though, even if they are man-made, I do think some of these things do have a benefit. Like we talked about tarot cards and stuff before, and we said, well, even if it's nonsense, it's still a way to...
Oh, I think tarot's great.
It's still a way to put your thoughts in order. It's still a way to work things out and think things through. Whether you believe or not, like I did when I did it for the podcast, despite not believing in tarot stuff, I actually found it a really interesting process. It really did like make me consider things and get my thoughts in order at the time.
It's and like so, mini therapy. Yeah,
exactly. It's like a mini therapy session. And I think there are, you know, there's a place for, if it's going to help you, then go for it. And in terms of like, you know, crystals and zodiac and all that stuff. If it feel like it has a benefit to you, then fill your boots.
Also, though, on the zodiac one, the thing that boils my piss a little bit with zodiacs these days is that people that are into, I don't know if I'm being quite contentious here, I might be alienating most of my fan base.
Your fan base?
Yeah, the people have got into the idea that I'm playing devil's advocate.
They're
going to
be ripping
like
their
that.
Tiss posters off the wall.
Yeah. The Tiss hotline's going to be empty. It's just when you meet people that are into zodiacs, they tend to boil you down into a sort of like, this is who you are type thing. And it's like, how about you get to know me as an autonomous, unique human being rather than boil me down into just a fucking section of this belief system?
It's a classic Taurus. Oh, God. we couldn't wait, could we?
What happened?
God, we spent so much time together. We both tried to make the exact same joke. We both tried to say it sounds like a typical tourist thing to say.
Tourist.
Tourist.
Oh, but I'm not Taurus.
What are you?
Aries.
It's so funny that we both went to Taurus, though.
I don't know why I was thinking of Taurus. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know zodiacs very well. I think I'm Scorpio.
I don't know.
Sure,
do you know what? The funny thing is, it's as contentious as I am being. I'm just a bit depressed today, so I'm probably doing a bit of a bob where I go a bit fucking AWOL.
Yeah.
On the things that I do believe, but actually, they are fun. Zodiacs are fun, but I think the thing that annoys me is people that tend to be super super into them.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of like, I think it gets in the way of like really evaluating a person for who they really are. Don't boil them down into like one of the 12. And just sort of like, you know, explain away their problems because, this is a typical fucking Aries thing. Oh, this is this. You know, people aren't just that. They're more than that as well.
You ever listened to the horoscope song by Weird Al?
I haven't.
I know it, yeah.
Dude, look it up. That'll put a smile on your face. That's some funny shit.
I know it.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I have heard. The thing is, when you are around people who do put a lot of faith in the zodiac stuff, and you do say stuff, they do often say, like, the amount of times I've had, like, oh, typical Capricorn, you're like, shut up. And you can't win because they can always just say, oh, yeah. Exactly as how a Capricorn would respond. You can't win, and that pisses me off.
I guess it's the determinism of it. It's the determinism.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to get on to the crystal skulls, right? That's why we're asking about crystals.
We are, yes. Yes, the crux of this subject, really. So in the movie, Cate Blanchett's character goes on to explain that he who returns the skulls will receive great power. Power over the mind of men is one of the things that she says. And they go on to say that apparently Indy and his old colleague Oxley, who they've been searching for through part of this to go and find the skull, they were fascinated with a particular skull, which is called the Mitchell Hedges skull. So this takes us into the real world now. So
is this a real skull?
It certainly is, yes.
Well, hey, here we go.
So
strap yourself in.
We'll take it back a step, though, first, because there is another skull, which is in the British Museum, of course, like all good artifacts.
Indy does mention that in the film as well.
Yes, he does.
He's seen the one in the British Museum.
So the one in the British Museum first appeared in 1881. It popped up in the shop of a Paris antiquarian called Eugène Bobin. And apparently he had three skulls, and one of them he peddled to the British Museum, saying it was a ancient Aztec artifact. We'll cover what it actually was later.
Oh.
But then the most famous skull, which is the Mitchell Hedges skull, was reportedly found in 1924 by Anna Mitchell Hedges, who's the adopted daughter of a British adventurer, and that's a job you can't get anymore.
No.
Imagine how cool it would be waking up and being an adventurer.
I mean, that'd be amazing.
But he was a chap called F.A. Hedges, who is Frederick Albert Mitchell Hedges, and he was a genuine explorer. He used to go and scour temples and ancient Aztec and Incan places in South America trying to find artifacts and document them.
What a time to be alive.
I know, right?
I know. So allegedly, during their expedition to a place called Lubantun in British Honduras, which is now Belize, in 1924, his daughter, Anna Mitchell Hedges, found the skull in a collapsed altar inside this temple. And she's made a lot of claims about it over the years, saying that it contains all sorts of interesting powers, and it's a very mysterious artifact. She claimed that it could cause visions, that it could cure cancer, that she had once used its magical properties to kill a man. And in another instance, she said that she saw a premonition of the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Did she say that before or after he was killed?
Yeah.
You know what? I don't know. But no, I should find that out.
I mean, it was definitely after. You don't have to look, Rick. It was definitely after. I'm telling you that now.
Almost certainly,
I knew
yes.
that was going to happen. Why don't you do something then? Why don't you tell anyone?
Yeah.
Seriously. So she said she killed someone with the power of this thing.
According to the articles that I've found.
And everyone was just like, oh, okay. They didn't try and arrest her.
Apparently not, no.
Or question who it was.
It's not considered murder if it's paranormal, so that's good to note.
Right, okay.
That's helpful.
Yeah, so she kept hold of the skull for a very long time. In fact, it's still with her partner. She died, oh God, when was it? I think it was the early 2000s, and her partner still holds it. But
was it 2008 when she saw Kingdom of the Crystal Skull and died from shock?
she wished. One of the interesting things about this skull is they actually sent it off to be analysed. It went to Hewlett-Packard because they were doing a lot of stuff with quartz crystal wafers, right. You know, like shearing right. small wafers to use in technology at the time. And they analysed the skull. And they couldn't find too much about it, to be honest. Like, they didn't find any bizarre properties.
Is that because they work with computers?
That's it.
See, they found that it's... It was cut against the grain, apparently, of the crystal, which is apparently quite a hard thing to do, because crystal normally shatters when you work against the grain.
That's what I was going
to say. Yeah, yeah. But then something that I did read is that apparently no investigation was made by Hewlett-Packard to obtain the method of its manufacturer or any sort of dating, which is kind of silly in itself because you can't really date crystal. You know, it's crystal, like trying to date a rock. You can't carbon date that because they're so
ancient.
Isn't
the whole point of a crystal that it's like thousands upon thousands of years old?
Yeah,
so even if you could make a date, what difference would it make? It's so far.
So I've actually got a little something to show you boys here. How do you normally do your clip sharing?
Have you got share screen at the bottom? That's what worked for me last time, but also sometimes just a link or...
Oh, yeah, right, or some, I mean, when we get desperate, we do just hold our phone up to the camera and shit. Yeah.
Right.
Well, hey, let's go.
Is that coming through?
Oh, yeah. Pornhub.
Excellent, right. No, even better. Even better. Ancient aliens. So this one's a 3-minute special, but it's worth every second,
right,
I promise you.
Let's do it.
You ready?
History Channel, yes.
According to Native American legend, there are 13 crystal skulls that are the same size and shape as human skulls. And these crystal skulls were left behind by the earliest ancestors from way back in the mists of time. The skulls are containers of great knowledge, great wisdom, information, that is important to mankind. In fact, the legend also prophesies that at a time of great need, all of these crystal skulls will be brought back together again, and that when that happens, they will divulge the knowledge, the wisdom that the Native American elders believe is actually vital to the very survival of the human race.
The Mitchell Hedges crystal skull was considered the Rolls Royce of the crystal skulls. It was the most beautiful crystal skull. It was discovered in the 1920s by the explorer F.A. Mitchell Hedges in Central America.
Mitchell Hedges loaned the crystal skull to scientists at the Hewlett-Packard Laboratory back in the 1970s, and they were unable to find any kind of tool marks on it. One of the most interesting things that they discovered was that the crystal skull was not made of just any old bit of crystal, but it was made from a type of crystal known as piezoelectric silicon dioxide. And this is exactly the type of quartz crystal that we now use inside all our information storage devices and all our communication devices.
Any quartz crystal object, including a crystal skull, can be encoded with information. And in fact, a quartz crystal can hold more information than a computer chip can. So any crystal object and crystal skulls is, in a sense, a small mini computer storage device. And just a small quartz crystal can hold more computer data than even the largest thumb drive that you're able to buy today.
When you think of the legend that said that the crystal skulls were containers of great knowledge, then perhaps if you think how much information we now store inside a tiny silicon crystal chip, then maybe there is vast amounts of information, as the Native American elders say, inside a crystal skull.
Mitchell Hedges was told by the locals that this skull was given to them by their ancestors. And it was said that their ancestors were the Sky People. Now, whenever I hear references to sky people, are we really talking about invisible things that somebody just came up with? Or a being descending from the sky in some type of a flying machine?
Thank you so much for sharing that with us. That was just... I love History Channel videos. They're just terrible, but so good.
As soon as I saw Ancient Aliens, I knew I had to. It couldn't be anything else.
Yeah, I mean, that packed so much into 3 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I'll wait for Tess to come back before I start really going into it. It's all right.
Oh, he's reopening Skype right now, he says.
Okay, cool.
He tried to watch the video and it exited his Skype, and now he's reopening Skype, and we're just going to summarize the video for him.
Cool. There he is.
Sorry. Hey.
Tiss, those skulls, the crystal skulls.
Yeah.
They're made of, well, this might give it away, they're made of the Mac Daddy.
They're made of the Mac Daddy quartz.
Yeah, quartz.
Runs silicon chips.
So this is why, Rick, is this why you're asking Tiss about the quartz?
Yes, yeah, because it is said that the skulls in the real world are comprised of quartz crystal, and the video goes on to explain that it is a storage medium, which is true. You can use quartz crystals as a storage medium.
How?
Yeah, I don't understand.
When they say you can store information on a rock, I don't understand what they mean.
How does that happen?
I'm an IT guy, and even to me, this is pure wizardry. If you go online and look up 5D optical data storage,
right,
you'll find it. There's a Wikipedia article that describes it, but basically it's like being able to etch onto layers of crystal and to store data.
What, and
so
you
it
could
becomes
like
an optical media.
You could like store on it like a film.
It's like the Ten Commandments being etched onto a big rock, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's it. There you
I
go.
Could store it at the Indiana Jones quadrilogy and plug it into my telly and watch it theoretically.
Trilogy, yeah. So there are a few out there in the world. Apparently, I understand that my favourite man, Elon Musk, has one, unfortunately.
Don't care. Obviously. Careful. Yeah. We're talking about that man on the pod, Rick.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently
I've already
he's
had
got
to edit you down on revisited for you going on Elon rants.
Please bleep his name. So apparently he's got
you're not a fan, Rick.
Oh, I love him, he's great. Isn't he such a fucking entrepreneur? Genius.
Don't
prod underrated.
Him, that's hilarious.
And now he's anyway, before yeah. Yeah, let's step aside from him. Yeah, apparently he has a copy of the disc, a disc which was made by something called the Arch Mission Foundation, which was a non-profit organization that's trying to create multiple redundant repositories of human knowledge around the solar system. So it's quite a lofty project. Apparently one disc is in Musk's library and the other one is placed aboard the Tesla Roadster in space.
Musk's library.
Oh, for goodness sake, obviously.
I was about to say I'd love to see what else is in Musk's library, but I really fucking wouldn't.
No.
So, can I just check something? So, when we... I made a comment while I was watching it, and you then said, oh, you're like 10 seconds behind me, I know what you're talking
about. Yeah.
I was very underwhelmed at the amount of information you can store. Like, when
yeah,
he said you can store the same and more than the biggest USB that
when he said that I was trying to look at the publication date because I was like the biggest thumb drive was
the biggest thumb drive, which
and
I
I'm
assume
like,
is yeah that's not that impressive.
The dude is talking absolute shit. That's from someone who knows nothing.
I think that's the thing I kept coming back to throughout the whole video was like even the guy doesn't believe what's coming out of his mouth. He's trying to. It looks like he's trying to, but yeah.
Let me put it in Wikipedia terms because the listeners love it when I just reel off chunks of Wikipedia.
Yeah, they love it when any of us say that shit.
5D optical data storage is nanostructured glass for permanently recording digital data using femtosecond laser writing processes. The memory crystal is capable of storing up to 360 terabytes worth of data for billions of years. So yeah, it is bigger than the biggest USB.
See, that was impressive. That was really
bigger
impressive.
Than the biggest thumb drive. But it says permanently, so you can't rewrite it. So in a way, my old USB is better.
Exactly.
I can rewrite that. He also said in that video, there are 13 crystal skulls. Did he get his information from the Indiana Jones film?
I mean, everywhere that I've looked, when I've been trying to research this, it says, like, there is the legend of the 13 crystal skulls. And I'm like, where did this legend come from? And in that video...
Did it just come from the film?
I think it came from the film.
They say Native American legend. It's like, why would Native American legend have anything to do with Incans or Mayans or American? It's entirely separate cultures. Why would it come from Native Americans?
I think this says more about the History Channel than it does about the topic because this is why I love these videos. Is it's basically some people, they're like, they say this, or you might have heard this, and then that's it. That's the truth.
Yeah,
the gospel. And it's like, well, where? What do you mean? No, I might be interested, but you need to give me like data. Like, where did you get that from? Some people just said it.
That's it. They just add these like vague clarifiers, like some say, and then you can say whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is good though. I live for those videos. Just so good.
It's really brightened up your evening, Beef.
It really has.
It's car crash material.
I forget they exist, and then when we do the pod, I'm like, oh yeah, these are great.
Do you think that's what the Weird Tales TV show would have been like? I think it would have been worse, actually.
Oh, I feel like, well, they probably would have made us be like seem interested.
No, it would have been more like Ghost Adventures. It'd be that sort of thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, we'll never find out, will we?
No.
You could have had Derek Acora on and everything. That'd been beautiful.
That would have been great. Oh. No, they wouldn't have let us be too controversial. They would have just wanted to send us to weird places and want us to overreact for a camera, like mug off for a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Oh, well.
Yeah, so the only other actual skulls that I've been able to find evidence of is there is a Parisian skull, which once again come from that Eugene Bobin that I mentioned.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And there is another one in the Smithsonian in America. But I've not been able to dig up any information that pertains to legends or 13 crystal skulls. The only thing that I managed to find whilst I was looking is, of course, Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, yeah. Oh, his crystal skull vodka.
Yep, he's produced crystal skull vodka.
Yes. Apparently it's pretty good.
Oh, I've not tried it, actually.
I've never had it. I've heard it's actually a good vodka. I don't like vodka, so I don't know what a good vodka tastes like. But apparently people like vodka's like, no, crystal skull vodka is actually pretty good. It's not just the gimmick, it's in the shape of a crystal skull.
Oh, I might give it a go. Yeah, but in this interview that he held about the crystal skull vodka, he said apparently the story behind the crystal head vodka is one of positive spiritual energy. He said 13 of these polished skulls, so the crystal skulls, have been found on our planet. He just states that with no evidence. He says 8 are in possession of individuals and institutions.
That is like conspiracy shit. That is like the New World Order shit.
Top men.
5 are missing. Once again, not evidenced. And he says, of the 8...
5 are missing
one,
based on what? How does he know?
Well, I know, this is what's bothering me.
You could say any amount of it. How would he know how many are missing?
But then
he
gets more bad
shit. How many there are in total?
He says, of each of the 8, each one is unique. Some are green, some are orange, some are cloudy, some are crystal clear. How do you know?
Yeah, if you haven't seen them.
He says some interesting things. That Dan Aykroyd, he says. We've had clips of him on the show before. He's a fascinating man now.
Yeah, he really is. Yeah. He really is. I like Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah. Who doesn't?
But yeah, he went off at the deep end. And yeah, fair play to him. He sticks by his guns. And it takes a lot of balls to talk about the paranormal in the depth that he does and with the absolute conviction that he does.
We talked about one of his shows got like he said it got pulled from the air because it got too close to the truth. Some paranormal show was going to do or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he said some interesting things.
So the pilot sucked. In other words,
Yeah.
On so we've got Sky, and Sky, if you've got Sky VIP, which we do, I don't know, I don't remember getting
all right,
it,
but big shot, brag.
Yeah, I know, right? but with this, every month you get a free movie. And it's usually crap, like proper crap. But because it's Halloween, this month it was Casper. So I downloaded it immediately and watched it, and it was much worse than I remember. But Dan Aykroyd, I forgot about Dan Aykroyd popping out, because they get the like the ghost hunters in to try and get rid of.
I totally forgot he was involved.
Fatso, Stinky, and Stretch.
Yeah,
the three horrible ghosts, and yeah, Dan Aykroyd goes. It's like it's something like, who you gonna call? Not us. And he like walks off, and it's really like. I forgot
that he was involved in that film in any way. That's very funny.
I just love it. It just made me laugh so much.
So I do have links to some interesting stuff. I actually have something from the Hewlett-Packard archives from 1971 when they tested this skull. So I'll send that through to you for the listeners to take
a
little peek,
because
it's like the original internal release Hewlett-Packard newsletter that's from their archive. It's pretty cool. But I'm afraid I've got some bad news, boys, because evidence did come to light showing that Mr. F.A. Mitchell Hedges purchased the skull at a Sotheby's auction in London on October the 15th, 1943, from a London art dealer called Sidney Burney.
Yeah.
Apparently in December 1943, Mr. Hedges disclosed the purchase of the skull in a letter to his brother, stating plainly that he had acquired it from Burnley.
That's a bit disappointing.
Very, yeah. Shot down very quickly. So there's quite a disparity, because obviously they said it was discovered in 1924. So, you know, there's nearly 20 years in that, where he kept that very quiet before he started talking about it. And he started claiming all sorts of supernatural powers. As I say, his daughter took up the mantle after he died and started talking about it a heck of a lot. And I think it just become one of those things that a family that was riding on the legacy of a fantastic explorer, it was the last thing they really had to keep him in the spotlight. And they tried to keep that spotlight burning as brightly as they could for as long as they can.
By lying.
Most of the skulls have been tested since, and there's evidence of tool marks on a lot of them. And it's actually believed that they were manufactured in Germany, of all places.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
The Nazis. The Nazis made them.
Nazi skulls.
Yeah. Was it Hitler's skull?
They did have little skulls on their hats.
That's true. It was about the Christ.
That's true. They did. And it wasn't one smashed in Peep Show.
That's true. That's very true. Yes. And we referenced 12. Peep Show in the last of Crystals episode.
I was
going to
say,
we
definitely talked about that in the Crystals episode as well.
Do you believe in crystal skulls?
This is so good.
But we've actually got a more recent reference to crystal skulls in popular media. In you guys must have watched Rick and Morty, the heist episode.
I haven't.
Okay.
I haven't seen Rick and Morty, unfortunately.
Yeah, I've watched Rick and Morty.
So you know the heist episode, Tiss? Son of a bitch.
I lost everyone for a second there. Oh. I'm back. Sorry, my internet cut out.
He's still frozen for
me. Oh, he's gone. Oh.
Oh, there we go. You back?
I'm back.
He's in and out.
He's gone again. Oh. Are you back now?
No.
No, he's gone, but he's still here.
His spirit is still with us.
I'm still here. Camera's gone. Yeah, my camera might have gone. My connection went loose for a while there. All right, I'm back. My video might come back in a second, but for now, I'm videoless.
So, all I was just saying, Bob, is have you seen the episode of Rick and Morty that's about the heist?
No, I haven't. I've seen very little Rick and Morty.
Okay. So, there's an episode, basically, where they're trying to pull off a sort of heist situation, and the thing that they're trying to heist is called the Crystal Skull of Horowitz.
Right.
So, you might be able to find a little clip on that, because I'm sure a lot of the listeners must watch that show.
Yes, they do. We get a lot of Rick and Morty references and stuff in comments and emails and things, because a lot of stuff we talk about comes up in that show.
Yeah.
Oh, Rick, for real?
Yeah, you got that skull, buddy?
What? How? That wasn't even a heist. All you did was
write an algorithm based on two heist movies I slept through and use it to automate a joyless process you call art? Yeah, I really did, didn't I?
So I suppose the real difference between reality of the crystal skulls and them being absolute bullshit is that in the film, the skull that Indy finds is a alien skull.
Yes. Well, hang on a minute.
Ah.
An interdimensional being.
Sorry.
That's the big twist at the end.
Sorry, fourth dimensional being, yes.
So, Tis, these aren't actually aliens. That's the big twist. You think they're aliens, and at the end they say that they're... At one point they say fourth dimensional beings, one point they say interdimensional beings, and when they leave on their UFO at the end, they say, where did they go? Out of space. And he says, no, they went to the space between space.
Space in between spaces. Yeah.
I thought he was going to say, no... When did they go?
I mean, it's no better, is it? I mean, they've got John Hurt in this spouting some absolute crap. I'm like, this is so beneath him.
Playing it's a raving criminal madman. Misuse of John Hurt. Yeah. It absolutely is.
It really is.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so what we end up looking at is basically an elongated skull that's made of crystal. So something that I did find quite interesting, which kind of ties in, is apparently the Nazca Indians, who this is the area that the story occurs in, is around Nazca. So you know the Nazca lines. Have you guys seen those? Yeah, yeah. Those giant pictures that could be viewed from above.
They're in the film.
So it's said that they were either used to communicate with aliens, or they were messages to God that were done by the ancients, and they're basically pictures of all sorts of interesting things like people and insects when viewed from like an aeroplane, they look like gigantic pictures, and people say that they would have been absolutely useless to people at the time because they wouldn't be able to view them at all. So it was just to communicate with the gods or some sort of aliens. So the Nazcans did actually practice head binding. Apparently, from about 200 to 100 BCE, they would use various techniques, including placing boards or using ropes to bind and compress the heads of infants so they would grow longer and have elongated craniums. They would look almost sort of like alien to us. And the idea is it would denote a status of either wealth,
kill the baby,
or power, or murder a baby.
So in the film, they see this in the cave painting, the hieroglyphic, whatever you want to call it, in Peru, in the cave. And Mutt says, you know, why are they looking like that?
Shia Mutt.
They don't look like humans. And Indy basically is like, well, they look like gods. They're trying to look more like their own god. And he's like, well, God doesn't look like that.
Did he say, oh, why the long face? Because that would have been good.
No, he doesn't say that. But he says, like, they don't look like any, they don't look like God. And Indy says, well, it depends who your God is. Basically implying these people worship the aliens. And also in the paintings, it shows these, like, aliens teaching them, like, farming and irrigation and all this stuff. A bit like what people say about Egyptian aliens. But like the South American version. I don't know how true any of that is. Probably not at all. I think it's made up for the film.
I did find it quite interesting, though, that cranial deformation was a thing. Like, I had no idea before actually paying attention to that film and researching it. I know there's been things like foot binding and stuff, but I never realised cranial deformation was a real thing.
I don't know why I knew about that. But I did. I remember watching the film and being like, oh, right, they're bringing that into it. But I don't know why I knew about that. I must have seen it in something else. No one I know.
No, I didn't know about that either. That's pretty horrible.
It is. It's horrific.
Yeah.
So in the end, they managed to go on the generic scramble that we talked about earlier for like 45 minutes with sword fights on top of cars and swinging through trees with monkeys and sailing cars down rivers and over three waterfalls.
Yeah, three times it drops. And there's also loads of ants.
Yeah, but by the way, Bob, three times it drops and then once they climb back up one. Did you notice that?
I was kind of tuned out of that bit. There's always a bit in Indy where the chase scene goes on a little bit too long. And I'm waiting for the final act. And I always zone out a little bit.
That they crash down three massive waterfalls and they hit the bottom of the third one. They will wash up on shore doing the typical, like, oh, so much water in my lungs. And they look up, and at the top of the waterfall they've just dropped down is the entrance to the cave, which of course is a giant skull.
Well, you didn't read the full sentences. Three times it drops and then climb back up one.
Oh, like, yeah. Silly me.
There's also a really weird bit. When they finally get to El Dorado, where apparently El Dorado, where there's the big pyramid thing is that they're going to try and get into, all these crazy like tribal people run out. For like, it just feels like such a lot of effort for a scene that lasts like 20 seconds. Like, they chase them all down the steps and they just pull the skull out and walk back up the steps.
So these things are kind of hinted at earlier on, because when they first obtain the skull in this graveyard where Francisco de Orellana is buried, and they get attacked by a couple of these like tribal dudes. Yeah. And then you see like the whole tribe that's at the outskirts of El Dorado who just start busting out of stone walls. It's really weird.
Yeah. I'm just like, how long were they waiting in there for?
This is no explanation.
Are we supposed to think that they're otherworldly, like they were waiting to be summoned and they're actually like immortal or something? Or I don't know. It just feels like, oh shit, someone might come today. I better hide in the wall. Yeah. It's all a bit ludicrous.
I felt like the Spielberg didn't get his natives quota in there, like every other film, and he had to do something.
Yeah, that bit is iffy. Yeah, Tis, we talked about the racism, possible racism in the Temple of Doom one. There is like a lot of tribal-looking types in this running around basically shouting Ooga Booga.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
And this wasn't made in the 80s like the other ones. This was 2008.
No, this is very new.
Yeah, this is just pure racism.
It's a little bit uncomfortable, that bit. When they're like scrambling around like spiders, they're literally like climbing up the walls with like bones in their noses.
It's full on.
Really? I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Beef, you've watched this film for... No, wait, it's Bob that's seen it 10 times.
Yeah. Only two, mate. Only two.
I watched it with my ex-girlfriend's parents and they fucking hated it, and I always remember.
That's amazing.
See, then after they've scrambled past the racism scene, they manage to get into the temple itself, and they get past a big pile of gold. And by the way, this whole time, I've not mentioned this, this film has also got... what's his name? Ray Winston.
Oh, yeah, Ray. Oh, Ray Winston, Jonesy. Is in it. Yeah.
Just like proper Cockney.
Yeah, Ray Winston's in it as well. Trying to scuffle all the gold.
You're lucky I'll turn up, Jonesy. Dove Chink, they wanted to blow your brains out. That's the third time I've saved your life.
Unshackle me, I'll give you a big hug.
You had a Luger pointed at the base of your skull first time we met.
I had the situation under control.
You owe me.
What do you owe them? Huh? After the war, when you turned, how many names did you give the Reds?
How many good men died because of you? Here.
Eventually, they're going to let me out of this chair, comrade, and when they do, I'm going to break your nose.
Comrade, you think this is about flags? About uniforms? You think this is about lines on a map?
It's just about money, isn't it?
Oh, not only money. A gigantic pile of money. Don't worry about what the Russians are paying. It's nothing compared to what's at Ekator. An entire city of gold. It's what the conquistadors were after. For God's sake, Jonesy, we'd be rich. Richer than Howard Hughes.
Blood money, every nickel.
I need you to see the angle here, mate. Be smart, do the right thing, just like in... Like in Berlin, got me? Just like in Berlin.
How do they get all these people?
Because they want to work on Indiana Jones. They want to work with Spielberg.
Yeah, and he's such a throwaway character as well. He's the guy who's clearly going to die because he's like the guy who's Dr. Jones's friend at the start, who then instantly betrays him in the first scene and then sort of goes back and forth the whole way. Indy punches him a few times to show that he still thinks he's a dick. And then he dies in a pointless scene trying to get a load of gold.
He's the character you're supposed to like be second-guessing the whole time. Like, oh, is he friends? Is he double-crossing him? Is he this? But he's just in it for his own, or in it for himself in the end of the day, isn't he?
Yeah. So they scramble into the temple and they return the skull. Within the temple is that you've got 13 of these alien skeletons that are all sat around that are made from the same sort of crystalline material.
But the problem is, I've got a flaw here. I've just, of course, what you've been telling us about the skulls and everything. So there are 13 of these in the world.
Mm.
And we go into the chamber and they're all around inside this room, apart from mm-hmm. one which doesn't have a head, which is the one that they've been carrying, which is the one the conquistador took, blah, blah, blah. It's all a bit convoluted.
Yes.
But hang on a minute. Didn't earlier in the film he say there was one in the British Museum?
He did.
So that's another one that shouldn't be in that chamber.
Yep. And they also acknowledge the Mitchell Hedges skull as well, so that's right. two that aren't there.
Right. Oh, my days.
So it doesn't, yeah. so it doesn't make sense.
Plot holes.
Continuity errors everywhere.
It's just a real shame, because up until the end, it's been very, like, litigious. Believable. Making sense and tight scripting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So they return this skull, and we see some sort of weird scene where somehow Cate Blanchett's character knows that they're all a hive mind, yes. and they all start suddenly merging into one. And yes. then she stood there, and she's like, "I want to know everything.
I want to know. I want to know." She just keeps saying that.
They start like blasting her with knowledge.
Yes,
and it's a bit too much.
It's
for
too
her,
much knowledge. It's more knowledge than you can fit on a thumb drive. And it's going into her at once.
This is it. And it wasn't rewritable.
I want to know. Tell me. I'm ready. I want to know.
Thing is, to me, it seems really naive. When she's like, these are so... these beings are so intelligent and have so much knowledge, they literally had to split themselves into 13 because they couldn't store this information in one body or whatever. And then she's like, put all of your knowledge in me, please. So not only are you not an alien, you're just a human. You want more knowledge than 13 crystal aliens are storing in their bodies. Of course your head's going to explode.
Yeah.
Of course.
So is that like this film's version of like the drinking the wrong grail?
Yeah, yeah. She wants everyone's like, we need to get out of this place. It turns out the pyramid thing they've gone into is a UFO. And
right.
she wants all the knowledge that's stored in these creatures. Who Indy says they are archaeologists. They're the same as him, but like alien archaeologists. And they've just been gathering information and knowledge across the universe, and she wants it all. And so she asks them, because they return the skull, they can have a request, a bit like a genie. And she's like, I want all the knowledge. And everyone else is like, this is not a good idea. And they start fleeing out of there, and she's absorbing all the knowledge and she can't take it.
Just overloaded. I've just done the maths, and judging by what I said earlier, she was actually trying to download 4,680 terabytes of information into her brain.
Yeah, oh my word.
So yeah, it was a bit much.
Of course your head's going to explode, in case you don't know.
So she turns to like absolute ash.
Yes.
As she's like pleading for it to stop. But the once again, the good old book goes, not the Bible, the book of
the real good book, the Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull novelization.
No, not that old gun.
That apparently goes further into it. And to quote the fandom page, it says here, in her final moments, Spalko painfully felt how her skull transformed into quartz, which doesn't happen in the film, as the interdimensional beings granted her requests to know everything. The last thing she ever perceived was a terrifying glimpse at the unidentified things that were beyond her comprehension. The continuous stream of knowledge overwhelmed her, fire erupted from her eye sockets, and she disintegrated, leaving just her boots behind. Her essence was transported to another dimension.
Whoa.
Through a portal, which revealed itself to be part of an enormous flying saucer.
This, you know, the novelization's better than the film based on that.
That's not hard.
That gives me a more clear idea of what happened. Because in the film, she just starts like her eyes are glowing a bit, and all these skeletons, all the crystal skull tiss is actually the skull of an alien. And when you see their bodies, their whole skeleton is crystal.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
They all start merging together, and then like each time they merge, like another layer of muscles built up, and at the end, it's just an alien standing there. But the novelization makes it sound to me like that's what only she is seeing.
I think so, yeah.
Which I like more, because in the film, you got just some dodgy CG alien who just like leans into the camera, and it's
very
really
frowny,
weird shot.
And just staring.
Yeah, he like frowns into the camera. It looks like he's going to light up a fucking
bad
spliff or something.
Yeah, it's bad. And then and after she's turned to ash, we get the generic sort of scramble out the temple where we see Ray Winston die.
He can't help himself.
Nope, because I just need it, Indy.
No point does he call him Indy. He calls
Jonesy. Sorry, wrong one.
Oh man.
Fucking Jones.
Jones, you fucking. deleted scene, that one.
then we see the collected team outside. LaBeouf and Dr. Jones himself stood there as they watch the whole ruins of Akator start to crumble. Or El Dorado.
Yes.
All starts to crumble and it starts to raise up, and we see this great UFO rise from the ground, all rock churning around it. Once again, massive use of the CG budget.
Yes. I do like that it does look like a classic flying saucer, though, because again, this stuff works. It's the 1950s. It's what people saw at Area 51 or Roswell or claimed to. So you've got a classic disc.
Mm. It's a nice touch. Yeah. And then, after it raises up all dramatically, nearly bashes Indy to death with a rock, it just like disappears. And then we see all the rocks come crumbling to earth, and Indy turns to John Hurt and goes, "Where did they go? Space?" And then we get the whole, into space, into the space between spaces.
Yeah, because suddenly Ox, who's been off his rocker for the whole film, has got all his faculties back.
Yep, absolutely fine. Now the aliens are gone.
He's absolutely fine.
It's unbelievable. And then we get some bullshit where Indiana Jones says that apparently El Dorado was supposed to be a lost city of gold, but in ancient Nazca, gold translates to treasure, and treasure was their knowledge.
Knowledge was their treasure, that's what he says,
That's the one. Knowledge was their treasure all along.
So the lost city of El Dorado, the golden city, the thing it was actually hiding was the knowledge of these interdimensional archaeologists.
Which melted Cate Blanchett's brain.
Yes. Which are like 13 giant thumb drives.
Yeah. Terabytes.
Indiana Jones and the knowledge of the thumb drive.
I'm glad I didn't watch it.
Painful.
I mean...
truly painful.
I kind of want to watch it again.
Yeah, from hearing all these mad things, does it not make you kind of want to watch it like this? Like...
not even in the slightest bit. It sounds so bad.
I kind of appreciate how fucking bonkers it is.
Mm-hmm.
It is very singular.
It's ballsy.
I appreciate it from a distance, but giving 2 hours of my life to it is just a bit much.
It's big budget cringe. It is absolutely awful. But I would say it oddly is worth a watch. Just once. Don't do it twice.
I feel like you should watch it. I've watched it 5 or 6 times in earnest, like sat down to watch it, which, let's say out loud, is insane.
Why?
Well, I watched it at the cinema. I watched it when we got it on Blu-ray in the house. I watched it with my ex-girlfriend's parents, who hated it. Like, towards the end, you know when you're watching something with someone and they clearly hate it? They were just, like, scoffing the whole way through, going, "Oh, there's aliens now." Like,
angry. My kind of people.
But, you know, this is...
Oh.
Yeah, so...
why was this the film that you chose to try and, like...
they said to me...
impress...
I wasn't impressing them, but I'd known them for a long time at that point. They said to me, "Have you seen the new Indiana Jones film?" I said, "Yeah, we got it on Blu-ray at our house." And then they said, "Can you bring it over next time? I'd like to see it." And I was like, "Yeah, it's good fun. I'll watch it with you."
Oh, mate, you should have said, "Nah, you don't want to bother with it."
I've watched it for this, and I watched it maybe last year during lockdown. I watched the Indiana Jones, all 4 of them, during lockdown, because I was just watching loads of our films. So that's at least 5, and I've seen it in the background loads of times when my little brothers were watching it, and I might have even watched it another time when I watched all the indies, some other time, like maybe when I lived in Stukely or something. I'm a glutton for punishment. I don't hate it. I really don't. I think it's so mad that I kind of enjoy it. It's so insane. And it, in spite of seeing all its flaws, I'm like, this film is so mad, I kind of dig it. I give it a 6 out of 10.
That's generous.
So after all of that, you're going to go
6 out of
10.
I've dedicated 20 years of my life to it.
Yeah, fair enough. I wish I had seen it more recently, though, because I only remember bits and pieces as you were talking through it. So I just haven't had the chance to watch it. And it's sort of, you know, when you can't find it on any of the stuff you've... like, no, it's not on any streaming sites.
No.
And so I just thought, I can remember enough. You know, I can remember the fridge.
I forgot about the fridge. For me. When me and Rick are saying, because we've obviously both watched it this week, when we're like saying different parts of it, just out of sequence, like, oh, it's a bit of a monkey, it's a bit of a fridge, there's a bit of a silver fire on a car. It does sound like some fucking crazy fever dream.
It sounds like you made it up.
It feels like that watching it.
To annoy Tiss.
There's too much. There's too much happening in one film, but also like not enough at the same time.
I briefly touched on it earlier, but at the end of that car chase, there's a scene where they crash the cars in the jungle and they are overrun by ants.
Yeah.
Like they're being attacked by ants who are forming towers and trying to grab people who are climbing on vines.
Yeah.
They kill the generic big Russian strong guy who's there.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's good.
It's not.
It's not good, though, it's is not. It?
Don't lie.
It's not.
No, it's not, but it's fascinating. It's fascinating, and I appreciate that, because I'm still talking about it. We're still talking about it. People still talk about this film, like how mad it is.
We're talking about it because we had to do an episode on it.
Yeah, but I've talked about this to people. There is stuff to talk about with this film, because it's
there,
that mad.
Bob. He's got you there, Bob. We wouldn't be talking about it unless we had to.
He has got me there.
We literally wrote an episode about it.
Yeah.
Or Rick did.
It's fascinating. I just feel like there's not... The crystal skulls themselves, because they're just the thing in real life, as you've pretty much uncovered for me, Rick, is they're just kind of either just a mystery that people actually don't know what they are, or just something some German artist made.
From what I've read, it seems there's four that are like the genuine real McCoy, and then there's this quote-unquote legend about the 13 that people have pulled up that sort of surround them.
Right.
I've not been able to find anyone who can actually evidence powers apart from Anna Hedges saying that she killed a man using one.
That's mad.
I know, which is bonkers.
I love that, and I love that they just went, oh, okay.
Yeah. The better indie films, they just have more to go on, though. When you think of Raiders, and when you think of Last Crusade, and you think of the Ark of the Covenant and the Holy Grail, there's, like, so much to those things. They've got, like, you know, biblical stories, historical stories. They've got a place in geography. They've got legends. Nazis looked for them. People want to search for their power. There's the religious power of them, but also potential, like, actual supernatural power to them. There's so much to go into. With this, it feels like, okay, Crystal Skulls, they look cool, but they had nothing to go on, so they just had to make a film up around a thing that just kind of looked cool.
I think that's it. That is it. And they I know it's quite a controversial one because of all the sort of racism that surrounds it, but the whole sort of like the Kali stuff and exploring that and the cults and everything, that they at least made an effort to try and flesh out something that had basis in reality, whereas the Crystal Skulls just felt so disprovable.
As I discovered when I dug into Temple of Doom, they were at least going for something. They dug in elements from different stuff and sort of mashed it together in maybe a not racially completely racially sensitive way, but it worked. They pulled things together to make something unique. This, they just kind of chucked too many action scenes at the wall and tried to say, well, this is a cool looking thing, because Crystal Skulls is a cool image, so they just, let's go with that and make it about aliens. It's the 50s.
Interestingly, so one little final point is that there was a lawsuit that was based around this film, and I'll send you the
links. Was it somebody went to see
again,
it and they wanted their time back?
No. So that's a class action lawsuit. That's a bit different. So this was a man called Dr. I think it's Jaime. It's Jaime.
You have to,
I apologize in advance, but yeah, I think it's Dr. Jaime Orr.
Get it right, or we'll sue you.
It says a real life Indiana Jones and director of the Institute of Archaeology of Belize was suing on behalf of the country of Belize, Disney, over the Crystal Skull. It says that the film used a replica of the Hedges Crystal Skull and collected illegal profits, apparently.
Wow.
So,
did he win?
No. Funny enough, it was dismissed.
I didn't think he was going to win that.
But mostly because that the Hedges Skull was proved to be bullshit, as I said.
Right.
This happened back in 2012, though, so it's quite recent. This guy tried to raise
this
a case about
this.
This
is what I mean. This. People still talk about this film.
Yeah, I think the trouble is now is anything to do with the Crystal Skulls is inextricably linked to Indiana Jones.
Yes.
And so it will keep it relevant as long as people believe that the Crystal Skulls have any sort of power.
Like, a lot of people hate this film. It is like a legendarily hated film. Yeah. I'm probably like its biggest fan, and even I'm like, yeah, 6 out of 10. I'd probably give it like the best rating on Letterboxd or whatever, and it's like 6 out of 10. It's a legendarily bad film, and it is fascinating. I think that I said it before, controversially, I don't think it is as bad as people say. I think there is good in it.
But there is some.
Yeah.
But you've got to dig deep enough to find it.
There was too much budget, too much cocaine. That's the trouble. If they had have refined those two elements down a little bit, then it would have probably been a bit more sensible.
I think Lucas was a bit high on like CG because he'd been pioneering it. He'd been pioneering it for so long. And then I feel like he then got along with his mate Spielberg and was like, look, you can do anything with this shit now. We can do anything, without realizing, like, no, what people liked about the old indie films was all the practical stunts, effects, sets. That was what was cool about them. It was like, wow, they really pulled off that stunt. Wow, they felt real. Like, whether you liked or didn't like the films, you had to admit they had some of the coolest, like, stunts and effects and stuff going. And to sort of strip that away just by putting CG in it, it stripped what the feel of indie.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. I hope they manage to bring it back in the next one, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
I will be absolutely fascinated to what the hell they're going to do. One, with like a 90-year-old fucking Harrison Ford, and two, just like, it's not Spielberg directing it, is it?
No, is it not?
No.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah.
It's one kind of little final bit. I touched on this very loosely earlier, but one thing I mentioned was that these skulls were likely manufactured in Germany.
Right.
So there has been scientific analysis on the available skulls, and the results of the studies demonstrated that those skulls that were examined were manufactured in the mid-19th century or later, almost certainly in Europe, during a time when interest in ancient culture was quite high, apparently. And it says the skulls were crafted in workshops in the town of Eider-Oberstein, which was renowned for crafting objects made from imported Brazilian quartz in the 19th century. And one other thing I didn't really mention as well is the ancient aliens bit that we talked about, that we looked at earlier, and hopefully the listeners have heard by now, is there's a guy in there who states that Hewlett-Packard were unable to find any tool marks. Like, it's something he explicitly states, but during the investigation, Hewlett-Packard said specifically that they didn't look for any methods of manufacture or dating. So technically, he is correct. They were unable to find any tool marks because they didn't fucking look for them.
Thing is, if I don't look for something, you can't then be like, he didn't even find this.
Precisely. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I've got a lot of links that I'll send you. It's a real rabbit hole for the listeners.
Yeah, any interesting links, listeners, they're going to be in the show notes. There's stuff to dig into this. I mean, I would be interested to know if there's any listeners who are on my side of this and think Crystal Skull's actually all right. And I'll be very fascinated if it's anyone's favourite indie film.
Oh, God.
And I'll be really fascinated if anyone read that fucking novelisation. I mean, I'm actually kind of curious about the novelisation. Is that everything, Rick?
Thankfully, I think that's pretty much all I've got. We no longer have to talk about Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Well, but we're still talking about it.
We're still talking about it. I'm going to watch it again. I mean, when I watched it last night, I did think I might not watch this again in my life. Like, this might be the last time.
It sounds like you've seen it enough times, though.
But yeah, Rick, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, dude.
Yeah, thanks, man. That was really good fun.
Thanks for subbing in and helping us get through the series.
Ah, thanks. I enjoyed that. That was absolutely great recording with you guys again. I've missed it.
Mate, it's been great having you with us and leading us through this. And fair play to you for taking this film and taking it under your belt and getting stuck in.
Yeah, you did a really good job with it.
I feel like thanks, man. More than any of us could have done with it.
Definitely.
Or should have done.
Yeah.
No, that was good, especially the stuff with the Hewlett-Packard investigation. That was great. Really good.
Yeah, it's really cool, actually. Yeah, I'll chuck over the links. And when Bob puts it all up, I honestly recommend you guys give it a little read-through, because it's really fascinating seeing all these old articles.
I'm interested in reading that, yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
So, listeners, that's the end of the Indiana Jones series. I hope you enjoyed it. After this one, we're going to have a little break, and then we're going to be back with something. I don't know if we'll be back in a few weeks and just up to our normal bullshit, I guess. Until then, if you want to get in contact, you can do so via the email. It's wtatupod@gmail.com. Or you can go to weirdtalesandtheunexplainable.com and contact through there. On that website, there are also ways to support us monetarily, buy merchandise, find links to us on social media and stuff. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Bob Shoy. That's at BOBSHOY. That'll do. That'll do for the links. Go on the website. All the stuff you need to know is there. I'm wondering if Rick has a pun.
Oh, God, no.
No.
I gave up on that. I absolutely quit, Matt. We can't even do it on the revisited episodes, dude. I'm not even going to attempt it on
the main one. None of us are good at the puns anymore.
Oh, come on, Rick. Put the effort in. We always get one out.
Tis, have you got a crystal or skull-based pun?
No.
I really thought he was going to fucking nail one then. He came in to lend us the microphone with such confidence.
I don't.
All right,
don't make one up because it'll be terrible.
Chris, still next time.
No,
thanks for listening.
No,
love you lots. No. And that's it.
Yep, most underwhelming end.
I mean, I thought I was going to get more reaction, to be honest, out of that. But
no.
Right, anyway, listeners, love you. Bye bye.
Yeah, see you guys.
See you.
Take care. Bye bye. Bye, bye, bye. Baby, I am missing you. I want you by my side. And I hope you'll miss me too. Come back and stay. I think about you every day. I really want you to. You swept my feet right off the ground. You're the love I found. Dr. Jones, Jones, going. Dr. Jones, Dr. Jones, Dr. Jones, get up now. Wake up now. Dr. Jones, Jones, going. Dr. Jones, Dr. Jones, Dr. Jones, wake up now. Wake up now. By the way, Rick.
Yeah.
How are you nervous about hosting your first like episode of Weird Tales as an actual like lead host?
Ah, it's all good, isn't it? I mean, what's to worry about? I've recorded with you boys before.
Once you get past the intro, it's fine. It's the intro.
Yeah, you got to do the intro. Can't be any worse than Tiss's intros.
what was the last one? How did you edit the last one together?
Oh, I left it all. I left it all. I didn't even edit it.
In case you didn't know.
What was it? In case you didn't know.
I don't listen for that same reason. I don't know like, how hello, diabolically shit it is.
It was like, hello and welcome to... this is Tiss, in case you didn't know.
In case you didn't know.
That was amazing.
Rick, whenever you're ready.
Right. No fuck-ups. I've got this. Okay. Bubbly brush.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.